Blog Talk Radio.
Sun's on my back, wind's in my ears.
Hello and welcome to Those Darn Guys Who Happen to Be Therapists. I'm psychologist Dr. Jim Weaver, along with couples therapist David Sanford. And Hughes Kraft is on vacation this week, so David and I will be boldly going by ourselves out into the potosphere once again where no therapists have gone before. Or failing that, hopefully putting the fun back in dysfunctional and bringing some insights into the issues of love, life, and the search for a decent relationship. And we will be joined once again toward the end of the show by psychologist Dr. Mark Kiefner, clinical director of Bayside Neurorehabilitation Services, with some more cutting-edge brain research called A Minute on the Mind. Hello, David. Are you there?
I am. Can you hear me, Jim?
I can hear you, David. All right. So we're it's just you and me today, buddy, so we'll see what we can do on our own. And I'll have Hughes back next week. Today's topic is the power and pitfalls of nagging. So let's talk about, first of all, what is nagging? I think nagging is a request for something that you want or you need, and you are not getting it, so you keep repeating it. Or it's something that you don't remember that you've asked for before, so you keep repeating it. And I think it's a sign of frustration, or, you know, not being powerful or potent enough to get what you want. So the question is, how do you ask for what you want? What should you do if you're not getting it? What happens when it turns into nagging? Are there sometimes when nagging is successful? In other words, how many times do you have to repeat something before you get it? Does it then become so routine, so rote, such a habit between the two of you that it doesn't really get you anywhere anymore? So you ask, you don't get. You ask, you don't get. And it really is a conspiracy between two people. So one of the things you can think is, how can I be more powerful? The other thing you can look at is, where is the resistance coming from? Why is the person not doing what I ask them to do or need them to do or so forth? So how do you then go to the next step of, maybe they're not wanting to do it, but not willing to tell me that, or not willing to tell why, or maybe they don't even know why. So, your thoughts on that, David? Did I go too much detail there for you, buddy?
Yeah, you said a lot. Definitely,
all right.
You said a lot.
Yeah.
While you're defining nagging from the perspective of the person being nagged, it's punishment. It's punishment to go on and on, you know.
Right.
And
right.
If you cared anything about me, you just wouldn't be treating me this way. I told you I would get to it, and I will.
Uh-huh.
And please get off my back about it. So. And it's very unattractive for both people, generally.
Right.
The nagger at least says that he or she doesn't like doing it.
Right.
Doesn't like. I don't like the way. I don't like myself when I'm nagging.
Right.
Nagging at you is a kind of a common complaint that I hear.
Right.
And certainly, most people don't like to be nagged at.
Mm-hmm.
Do you agree?
I absolutely. Yeah, I think it's generally considered a negative thing. But the nagger would say, I have no choice. I need this thing. I want this thing. I'm not getting it. I have no choice. And the naggy would say, yes, you do. You can stop. Right?
Right. So it's a very distasteful negative dance between two people.
Right. And it's poised to something dysfunctional, right? This issue isn't getting settled.
Right. And I think there are a number of possibilities for what's dysfunctional about this particular dance. One is it's a power maneuver. The person who is refusing to do what he or she had originally agreed to do, mm-hmm. Is actually practicing some form of passive aggression.
Right.
In other words, making the person who asked originally, making the other person unhappy by denying that person mm-hmm. something that you know that he wants or she wants. And you deny it, and you deny it until sort of smoke begins to curl out of the other person's ears.
Right.
And then inside yourself, you
I've
say,
that.
I
that.
Won that one. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when we look for ways to get around this, we're, I think, assuming that people would really like to find a better way. Which I would say is often the case, but not necessarily. And people might not want to find another way if for whatever reason, fear of intimacy or whatever, if for whatever reason they prefer a relationship of sort of running antagonism between the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
Think I'm going too far on that one?
No, I don't. I don't. I think that, there's a question of, if not this, what? And I think you said that intimacy. Maybe there's some things that could be said, should be said, that people want to avoid. So better to do this dance, right? That's maybe from the naggy's part. On the nagger's part, I think it may be... I don't want to take some action that would, maybe get me what I want, but on the other hand, maybe really put the other person on the spot or make them angry back at me. You know, you talked about passive aggressive, and the aggressive part is, there's some hostility there that maybe. They don't want to hear what's behind the aggressive. They don't want aggressive. They're content to stick with passive aggressive.
You were talking about both people.
Yeah. Well, no. I was talking about the nagger. Well, I was talking about the nagger not wanting to, not wanting to hear back what's behind the passive aggressiveness.
You mean escalate?
Yeah,
which
yeah.
Okay. So it is. So one way out, not a good way, but worth mentioning, because people do take it. One way out is to get the big guns on the deck there.
Mm-hmm.
Let's threaten each other now. If you keep
right.
this up, I'll tell you what I'm gonna do. I will, so on and so forth.
Right. Well, let's take parent and child. Clean up your room. So the kid doesn't clean up their room. Clean up your room. I told you to clean up your room. Clean up your room. Clean up your room. Clean up your room. Nagging about cleaning up your room. Well, the positive thing might be to say, if you don't clean up your room, here's going to be a consequence that you're not going to like. And the kid doesn't believe you because all you've done is nag, all you've done is talk. And then, a solution to that would be, okay, so I'm going to take away your computer. Then there's real hostility. That's not going to be passive aggressive. That's going to be, you know, how dare you? You're a bad parent. You're a terrible parent. You're really mean. You know, you can't take away my computer.
Basically, to follow, to use the consequences method,
yeah,
you've got to be willing to stick with it, and you've got to be willing to endure your knowing that you're not being a nice guy, you know, a nice woman, a nice parent, right?
Sure.
You got to
right.
be willing to put up with that.
Right.
So, I assume now we're looking for ways out, right?
Right.
Alternatives to nagging. So we've got one
right.
already.
Yep.
And not the one that people generally go for first, but it's an important
right.
one, and it often works. And
right.
that is, there are consequences. So,
right.
so if I may kind of spell this out a little bit, let's say that you've asked your spouse to please replace the screen door on the back porch. And
right.
that person said, yes, I will, and then doesn't.
Right.
So you have in mind, you may tell your partner this or you may not, but you have in mind, I'm willing to go back and forth on this for 2 weeks.
Mm.
At the end of 2 weeks, I'm hiring a carpenter to come in and do it, despite the fact that in our town, or our neighborhood, they charge $75 an hour. Okay? And
right.
you probably, to be fair about it, you're not just going to drop this into
right.
your partner's lap. You're going to sweetly say after a couple of days, look, I want you to know I'm willing to let this go for 2 weeks at the end of that. You know, you remember Charlie Brown. I'm going to hire him. It's $75 an hour to do the job.
Mm-hmm.
This is the tricky part of it. I mean, it's going to sound like a threat, and
right.
and in a sense, it is.
Right.
But no, it's consequences. There ought to be consequences. People
well,
yeah.
I mean, with a kid, you know, you have some expectation and power as the parent to be able to do that. As a partner, the question then is, you know, how much do you have the right to say, and so in this case a little bit arbitrarily, I'm going to hire Charlie Brown. But the possibility of that happening then may get to a real discussion. You know, you've asked me to do that screen door. That screen door is not a priority for me. I'm swamped with all of this other stuff. I don't have enough time to relax. I think you're making the screen door a priority when it's not a priority for me. So then you start talking about what you really feel about the screen door rather than, yes, I'll do it.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah. Couple of thoughts on what you're saying.
Sure.
This process has a real possibility of leading to some frank, open, exploratory conversation between two people if it is not pursued along the lines of power. So
right.
if the person who says, I'm going to hire Charlie Brown at $75 an hour if you don't get this done, is perceived to be threatening or otherwise making use of power, the resentment on the part of the other person is going to continue and, in fact, will grow greater.
Right.
On the other hand, if this quiet way of communicating the same information but basically saying, I need to tell you how important this is to me,
right.
and because it is important, I do hope that we can that you will go ahead and do what you've agreed you would do, but if you don't, I really need to tell you that I'm at the point where I got to get it done, and
right.
and this is what I'll do.
I think you think
so,
of
in a calm
a really,
way, in a non-threatening way, without the finger in the face kind of thing.
Right, right. Yeah, I think it's really helpful to get to those points before you get, you know, so angry or so frustrated that it really does come out with harshness. That you really approach it as I'm really trying to get a solution to this.
Right.
Rather than I'm really trying to get my way. And I think you bring up an excellent point in being able to talk about why it's important for the screen door. Because
important to you, the one who's asked for it. Yeah.
Exactly. And that's why I was talking about the Nagy at that point earlier, talking about why it's important not to get to the screen door, why the Nagy has other priorities, or other things that make it difficult. I mean, this may not apply to the screen door, but maybe the person is a terrible carpenter, and they're really afraid that if they start to tackle that screen door, they're going to mess it up, and they don't want to talk about their incompetence. They don't want to appear incompetent. They don't want to go there.
Just not good. Not good at screen doors.
Right. Right. And so that faces their incompetence. You know, another thing that goes. Go ahead.
Wait. Slow down a little bit. You're actually getting to another way out of this particular dance, this sort of very negative pattern. And that one is you make an agreement ahead of time that the person that you are, the two of you make an agreement that if one of you wants something, that person asks, and the other person has a perfect right to say no.
Right.
And if that person says no, it's okay to ask why. Why no? But
not only is it okay.
Huh?
Not only is it not okay to say no, I think the person.
It's essential.
Essential. And the person has an obligation then to say why. And again, then you weigh the relative need. You know, I really need to get that screen door fixed. It really is important to me for these reasons. And the other person says, you know, it's really, I have so many other things that are really, really important to me. And I can't get to that.
But there can't be, yes, I agree all the way about that. At the same time, there has to be an understanding that no is a legitimate answer. And that you're not going to get punished for no, because there are many relationships in which the power dynamics are so strong in the relationship that one person, sometimes both people, will not flat out say no because the price is simply too great.
Right.
And there are many cultures, as we know, in which people don't. They do not say no. They always say for sure, of course,
right.
and then they don't do it, and they don't, and that's a whole other story. But the fact that there are whole cultures in which no is a forbidden word is an indication that for most of us humans, it's a tough one to handle.
Right. Exactly, and I think sometimes in those cultures where you don't say no, there are rituals and there are other ways in terms of trying to figure out what the person really is saying when they say yes, since they only say yes, but they're probably different. You know, just like the Eskimos have, 30-something descriptions of snow. In some of those cultures, they probably have 30 different descriptions of yes. you know what yes means. One of the things I want to get to before we run out of time is, sometimes there's some deeper-seated issues in terms of this. That the person has a history of their childhood of being told what to do, not being able to express their opinion, not being able to say no, having to figure out all kinds of ways to get out of something without saying no. So your wife says something to you, and you hear your mother or you hear your father, and vice versa, you know, and you say, oh, God, I hated that when I was a kid, you know, being told what to do, or, you know, tasked by this parent or that parent. And, you know, I found ways to get out of it back then, or I didn't, and now I'm gonna find a way to get out of this because I hated that so much. You're just like my mother, and sometimes that's not even conscious; it doesn't even come out. But you do hear it, you know, people saying, and you must hear it in couples therapy all the time. I do, you know, she sounds just like my mother. He sounds just like my father, or vice versa.
And, when people talk that way, you know that the pattern that they're into is a parent-child pattern.
Exactly.
And in fact, in many relationships, one person is effectively the parent. And
right.
The other one is the, you know, the adolescent always trying to talk his way or her way out of something.
Right.
So when we're looking at the pattern,
right.
The pattern that involves agreement to do something, not doing it, and nagging, we got to look at the also at the dimension of whether or not this is really an adult relationship in which
right.
each person occasionally asks the other person to do something. Or is
right.
it basically a master servant, a boss employee, or a parent-child relationship?
Mm-hmm.
And clearly, you know, if people really want to find a way, the ultimate way of making this whole thing work and staying together, then they got to find ways of building a truly adult relationship.
Right, right. Adult to adult, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
It's the old Eric Byrne games people play, that you come into a relationship with three different kinds of approaches, either as a parent, either as a child, or as an adult. And sometimes there are good parent-child things, you know. Somebody needs you to take care of them, you take care of them. And sometimes it gets into kind of stuck patterns where it goes in that sort of calcified way where you don't get something constructive, adult, done.
So the nice thing, if there is any nice thing, about this dynamic, well, once people begin to explore it, is that it leads in all sorts of important and fascinating directions, you know. I think the most prominent of which is this a relationship of equals?
Right.
Or even though we say it's a relationship of equals, is it basically one who plays the always satisfied, I don't need anything and I never ask for anything, and mm-hmm. always dissatisfied. I'm the one who's asking, pleading, nagging, whatever, and you're going to give it to me, you're going to withhold it.
Right.
Whether it's about sex, about repairing screen doors, or whatever it is, you know?
Right, right. All right, you know, we've got Mark Kiefner now with us, so let's turn to Mark and see what he has to say about the power of nagging and the pitfalls of nagging. Hello, Mark.
Hey, Jim.
Hi, Mark.
Hi, David. How are you guys?
We're exhausted.
You're exhausted.
We are. We are.
I am too.
I had to nag him repeatedly to be willing to do this topic at all.
Don't go there, David. Don't go there, David. Don't go there, David. We're going to talk about those pictures.
David, it's a nice thing that you've reduced the sexual issue or the gender issue around nagging here by taking that on. You know, now we know that men can nag men.
Really? Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That's true. It's
yeah.
true.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know, this is a kind of an interesting topic for a neuropsychologist because I actually couldn't find anything on the topic of the neuropsychology of nagging. I did a little literature search, and I didn't find one article on the neuropsychology of nagging. So now I know there's a whole field that's wide open.
Wow. There's some dissertations out there, as we used to say.
Yeah, I know. Someone should tackle that.
But the neuropsychology of power. And that leading to power imbalance, I would imagine there are quite a few studies on that, aren't there?
I think, you know, I don't know that there's much on the neuropsychology of power, but I actually haven't done that either. But I think that there's a lot on the neuropsychology of repetitive patterns and
okay.
the neuropsychology of developmentally formed schemas or maps that we use to invent our reality. And
mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, when I think neuropsychologically, what I tend to think is that our underlying state, and of course I'm not the only person who ever thought this, is anxiety. And so when we, you know, when I think that nagging tends to result or comes out of our underlying anxiety about something that we think is important.
Not getting accomplished, or that we don't have the power, or that we're not going to prevail, that sort of thing.
Yeah. I mean, if it's important that the lights are turned out, you know, you might want to ask four times. You know, if it's important that did you remember to get the milk at the grocery store, you might want to ask four times. Which, of course, the other person doesn't hear as your anxiety; they hear it as your distrust or you're annoying them to death or whatever. So
right.
But for me, it raises the question, and I'd be curious about your thoughts on this, about how do you address a partner's anxiety? How do you address a partner's concern that mm-hmm. manifests like that?
Right.
Thoughts on that from the more therapeutically oriented people?
I think the first thing you have to do is hear it and recognize it.
That's right.
And there's some responsibility on both parties. The person who's you know feeling anxious or you know there's some anxiety underneath the nagging, to express that in a way that can be heard, you know, rather than aggression. You're then talking about your vulnerability. I'm anxious, and then there's the responsibility on the other person's part to be sensitive to that, curious about that, open to that, and to hear that, you know.
Dismissive and not make fun of it, you know.
Sure.
I'm not going to hear this. That's idiotic for you even to feel that way. And then, of course, the anxiety increases. And the willingness to hear it and communicate it decreases.
Sure. We were talking about screen doors earlier, repairing the screen door. You know, somebody might say, no, but it can represent something serious, you know. I'm really, you know, deathly afraid of, you know, the neighbors seeing our house being in a shambles or whatever. And it really affects my self-esteem. So it makes me anxious not to have that screen door repaired. You know, people can see that we don't take care of our property, et cetera.
Yeah.
So, you know, it can be all kinds of things underlying something as simple as a screen door.
There's one dimension of Mark, go ahead.
You go ahead, David.
You're going to there's a dimension or a solution that we haven't talked about, and we don't have time to go into detail, but simply to mention it, some people basically say, I'm not going to ask for anything. I'm going to basically detach from this relationship. I'm going to deal with everything within myself or with my friends, or I'm going to hire Charlie Brown to fix the screen door. And then it becomes a really detached relationship, and it's hard to say that, it's hard to think of it as in any way a loving, supportive relationship anymore. It's two people just go their own separate way.
And David, what I was going to say earlier, which is sort of the other end of that spectrum of separateness, is that oftentimes when people are together, they experience a sense of oneness or a sense of unity.
Right.
And
right.
And therefore, if half of me looks shabby, you know, if my husband looks shabby, then half of me looks shabby.
True.
And I'm gonna get him to dress better, for example.
Right.
Or if you know my house looks my screen door looks shabby, then I look shabby. And so there is I think in relationships, that feeling that each person represents the other.
Yeah. Hey guys, we are totally and completely out of time.
Shocking.
You know, I know it is such a it's just great to be with you guys and to talk about this stuff.
But you're talking on and on here, and I was going to make a great point.
Okay, well you can, but nobody's going to hear it because the show's over.
Well, at least that relationship continues.
On the other hand, the tape is still running, and if anyone picks this program up, you know, out of the archives, it's all there.
Okay, great.
Okay, so the thing I wanted to say about Mark, what Mark had to say about unity and oneness is, yes, that's a possibility. The other possibility is that if in the example of the husband dressing sloppily, and that's an affront to the wife's side of the oneness, I would think that really, and she's going to change the way he dresses, I think that's more a matter of cannibalism. I mean, basically, she's eaten him, so to speak, and he lives inside of her now in the form that she likes.
Oh, David, you are opening the door to a much, much longer discussion.
Oh, really? Maybe that could be next week's topic, cannibalism.
Next week. That's right, cannibalistic relationship.
Psychic cannibals.
I like that.
Psychic cannibals with David and Jim. All right, guys. Have fun.
Okay, satisfied.
See ya.
Great. Okay, guys.
See ya.
Bye,
see James.
Okay, buddy. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.